Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 213. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
That's me.
It's our first Blood episode. We're going to go in depth. We're going to go balls deep into First Blood. And but before we get into that, Chris, you saw a few recent movies. I wanted to talk about a couple that I rewatched.
Yeah.
This will be quick, and then we're going to go pretty in depth on First Blood, full spoilers, all that. I mean, it's an old-ass movie, so... And famous movie, so I'm assuming anyone listening to this has probably seen it. But first off, you know, speaking of action films, you went and saw the latest Has Fallen movie, or
yeah,
whatever, Gerard Butler series.
It was a terrible... I guess that would be how you would refer to it, right? The Has Fallen series, but it's a terrible series name. They didn't think this through very well. Yeah, it's the third of these Gerard Butler playing a Secret Service agent that saves the president type action films. And I honestly, I don't remember much about the previous two. And the details of this one are quickly fading from my mind. It is it's a fine action, like, shut your brain off, go watch dumb action shit for a while. There's not a lot there, though. I think Nick Nolte is in this, though, as Gerard Butler's dad.
I saw a still of him. Does he look like crazy? And
yeah, he's crazy. He plays like this guy who he might be a Vietnam vet, I'm not sure, but like that era of a vet. And he's crazy, kind of. He lives off the grid and hasn't like left his son Mike, who played by Gerard Butler, like when he was a kid. And you know, Mike has kind of just been following up on him. But in this one, the premise is that president has been an attack on the president, and Mike Banning, who is Gerard Butler, he has been framed for that murder, or for the assassination attempt. And he goes about trying to clear his name. So think The Fugitive,
okay.
In a way, but mixed with like over the top action. And not anywhere near as good as The Fugitive. It's fine. Like, I enjoyed my time with it, but as I said, like, I walked out of that theater and shit just started to fade out of my mind immediately. It was a good enough time for that. I think if you've enjoyed these films in the past, this one isn't going to hurt you. but it's not. It is not top tier action material. It's honestly pretty fucking ridiculous. So,
yeah, I mean, I might give them a go one day. I've never seen any of them, but,
yeah, it's, I think the original one, Olympus Has Fallen, is actually kind of like legitimately decent action film. It just happened to also come out around the same time as another White House Gets Attacked movie.
Oh, yeah.
White House Down with Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's a better movie. it's more Die Hard, esque than these Has Fallen movies. These are fine. Like, the fact that they made three of them is kind of nuts, but... Yeah, I mean, if you're not don't have anything else to watch, which will never happen, but if they happen to be on and you didn't want to reach for the remote to change the channel, that's the type of film they are.
Yeah. All right, I could probably guess, but I don't know if you're ready for a score, unless you wanted to.
Yeah, I'm right out of three with this. It's like right in the middle.
Yeah, you ever seen Den of Thieves with Gerard Butler?
No, that was one from last year, right? I heard that was pretty good.
Yeah, it is. It's like, it is a, like, almost like, this is how I remember it. It was like almost like a beat for beat Heat ripoff.
Okay.
But really fun. Like, I really liked it. Like, I was really surprised by it because it had bad reviews and stuff, and, like, nobody gave a shit about it. And I, like, I think I watched it by, you know, through Netflix, like, their disc mailers or whatever, and, you know, I went in with no expectations, and I thought it was a lot of fun. He's, like a total badass boozer in it. Like, I think he's a cop. But it's a fun, like, heist type movie.
Yeah, I like heist movies. They're making a second one of those, evidently. So.
Damn. Well, yeah, you should check it out. Like, I don't know if it's available on anything right now, but I would say it's honestly worth a rental, like, if you had to pay for it even. You also saw, and you're going to have to let me know, a film called V on Shudder. Now, is that a 2014 film or a 1967?
That is a 1967.
Okay.
Soviet. It's the first Soviet horror film that was made. It is based on a short story by a writer, Nikolai Gogol. I've never read any of the stories. I just happened to stumble on this with Shudder's new kind of, they have Shudder TV. Like, when you boot it up, it just instantly pops you into a movie. And this one, it looked a little goofy. Like, it looked old, but there was enough going on that, like, I came back to it the next day and watched it all the way through. That was probably a mistake. This is a film maybe better enjoyed when you're a little bit buzzed.
better at a glance and while you're not sober. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's about this seminarian who has been tasked with going and praying over the corpse of a dead witch for 3 nights. And there's a lot of setup to it. So I actually came into the film in what is the interesting portion of it, which is like the last third of the first 40 minutes. And it's a short movie. It's a 77 minutes long. Mm. The first 40 minutes are all set up, and it's all like,
it still feels long, even though it's short.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh my God, like, when are they getting anywhere with this? And then when he finally gets, and he's, you know, praying over this this witch, like, some of the special effects actually look pretty decent. They had some cool camera tricks, and I mean, this is a film from 1967. Like, you're not expecting much, and it's a film from the Soviet Union, who, like, you know, really not expecting much. Like, they weren't exactly known for creating great works of cinema during that time. But some really cool special effects in, like, the back third of this film, and some really cool practical and visual costuming in, like, the final maybe like 10 minutes of this. The demon, Vi, however you want to pronounce it, he is, like, grotesque, and like, it looks really cool, but getting to that point is just such a slog. And I'm surprised, like, I went and rated it on Letterboxd, and I rated it 2 stars. I'm going to do here too. It is holding a, like, really strong, like, 3.6 or something, like, which means most people are rating it like a 4.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Cause when you look at Letterboxd, a lot of even, like, really great films struggle to get past 4, you know? You have that many voices chiming in on a 5-star scale. Like, it's just, that's how it goes, you know? Yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah. And I don't know what they see in it. Like, the acting is weird. Like, it's obviously dubbed into English, so the dubbing is terrible. So that kind of affected some of my opinion of it as well. And maybe it plays better in its native tongue. But it's not worth digging into to go see. But if you happen to turn on Shudder and you catch the last half hour of it, it's interesting, to say the least.
So, like I said, at the very least, you know, and this is one thing that I think Shudder is great for, you expanded your horror knowledge a little bit. You know what I mean? Like,
right. I was never going to, like, if I'm just searching through like Netflix or even Shudder, like if I'm just searching through, like, this isn't one I would click on when it's from 67. Like, it's not one I've ever heard of before. And it doesn't look like, it looks like a film from the late 60s. And there are people that enjoy those types of movies. I don't happen to generally be one of them. But the fact that, like, Shudder just instantly pops you into a movie, it gave me a chance to, like, see it. I was interested enough. And then, like, you know, digging in, seeing that it is, like, this was the first attempt at a horror film out of the Soviet Union. Like, that's pretty cool, regardless of how the film kind of came out, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what I love about, one of the things I love about Netflix, or not Netflix, Shudder,
yeah.
Is just that, like, I was just trying to think of this one I caught on there. There was, like, this early 90s, like, 1990, like, art house horror flick that was, like, with, like, a rural setting. And I didn't like it. Like, a lot of people, I can't remember the name of the film either, unfortunately. I didn't like it, but it was one that, like, a lot of people, like, know and love. But it's like, now I know that film. Unfortunately, I can't remember it for the purposes of this discussion. But if someone said the name to me, I would be like, oh, yeah, yeah, that. But, like, it's just amazing how, you know, you can consider yourself pretty knowledgeable of horror, but honestly, like, I'm honestly not. I'm knowledgeable about, like, where I came in on, like, from, you know, like, mid-1980s on. But, I mean, there's stuff back there, and then there's stuff, like I said, in the 90s and beyond that I've missed, so.
Right, like, they're just, like, even with the extent of horror films we watch and kind of dig into, like, there's still, like, some, like, really obscure, like, indie horror stuff that, we probably didn't touch in, like, the 80s or 90s, just because, like, we were probably watching more mainstream horror at that time. And,
yeah,
like, it's interesting that and great that Shudder is pushing this stuff out there and exposing people to it.
The people who run Shudder are awesome, and I hope it never goes away.
Yeah.
Leave it at that. And this is not an ad. We don't get any money, period. But,
no.
Yeah, you know, I've watched a couple movies I want to touch on before we get into First Blood. These were also rewatches for me. I've been doing a lot of rewatches this summer for some reason. I just went through, like, all, like, literally all the Tarantino films. And, you know, I went out shopping the other day, had my day off. Like, I just went to, like, Best Buy and shit and picked up some stuff. I picked up some stuff off of Amazon. But there are two, like, recent rewatches for me that stood out. And one of them was A Few Good Men. And I want to say, like, I don't know for sure, but I want to say, like, when we did our favorite, like, 90s episode, you might have mentioned this film. Like, it might have been on your list.
It's very possible.
You've seen it, right?
Yeah, I love A Few Good Men. It's great.
Yeah. I think I love that movie more than I ever have. Like, rewatching that movie is just so fucking fantastic. And it's crazy, too, because, like, Rob Reiner, you know, I don't think Rob Reiner is, like, an especially, like, interesting director or anything. Like, he doesn't have to do anything here. Like, it's all in the script. It's all the fucking dialogue by Aaron Sorkin. It's all right there. It's all, like, it was all on the page. And you had, like, these actors at the top of their game bring it to life. You know, it's early 90s Tom Cruise and early 90s Jack Nicholson. It was like, I remember it being great, but it was even better than I remembered. So I don't know, like, do you have any idea the last time you've seen that movie?
It's probably been a decade at this point.
Yeah, I would watch it again, dude. Like, there's more going on than I even remember. Like, a lot of it is about, like, you know, Tom Cruise trying to decide what type of lawyer he wants to be and, like, trying to live up to his dad. And it's like all these, like, little backstory type things that didn't even need to be there. But they make it, like, so much richer, and, like, you, like, care more about, like, you know, this court case that he's doing because of, like, the little bits of flavor they put into, like, the characters, into him especially. you know, he's like this kind of cocky asshole, and Demi Moore, she like challenges him to be like a good lawyer. And I remember like the ending being kind of like the final courtroom scene where it's like him and Jack Nicholson going toe to toe. I remember that being like, I don't know, 5 minutes long. It's way longer. It goes on for like, I want to say like 15 minutes or so, if not more. And I was like hanging on every word. It's so gripping. The way he like picks Nicholson apart and gets him to, you know, finally expose himself in that very famous line, you know, I want the truth. You can't handle the truth, like that. Like that's like the climax of that whole scene. And it's just, it's so good, man. Like that movie's just like damn near perfect. It's like, I never watched The West Wing, but as far as films go, I'd say that's like Aaron Sorkin's best script. I mean, it's just so fucking fantastic. So I wanted to just give that movie a little love. I mean, it was really great. I had no regrets. You know, I think I bought it off of Amazon for like $9 or some shit. I'm happy to have that in my collection now. And another one I rewatched recently, Chris, was, or actually last night, was The King of Comedy. Have you ever seen that movie?
I don't think I have.
I want to say it's like it's early 80s, like maybe 82. It's a film by Martin Scorsese. And the reason I watched it actually is because the new trailer for Joker released yesterday.
Yes.
And I thought it was like impossible. Like if you have seen The King of Comedy, it was impossible to miss the parallels between the two. Like it really feels like when I saw the first Joker trailer, I'm like, oh, this is pulling from Taxi Driver. And you could definitely feel that. But, you know, Scorsese and De Niro worked together a lot early on, and they kind of did like a movie that feels kind of spiritually close to Taxi Driver called The King of Comedy. And Robert De Niro, like, so anyways, after seeing the trailer for Joker yesterday, I got really like excited to see that movie.
And De Niro's in Joker.
Yes, yes. So that's another reason why it's impossible to miss the, like, if you've ever seen The King of Comedy, it's impossible to miss the connection there. So like I was like, oh, like, ooh, you know, like I want to see Joker. I'm excited. And then I was like, you know what? I haven't seen The King of Comedy since I was probably like 18 years old. And I remember not totally getting it then, or not liking it as much as like Taxi Driver, probably because it doesn't explode into violence. But I was like, you know what? Let's see if this is on anything. It's on Amazon Prime, and so I watched it last night. And within 10 minutes, I'm totally wrapped up in the movie. It's Robert De Niro plays like another loner. He's like this 34-year-old loser who like lives in his mom's basement, and he thinks he's going to be the next big comedian. And he's obsessed with like basically like the Tonight Show, which is played by like the host of the, I don't think they call it the Tonight Show in it, but it's like the host of the show is played by Jerry Lewis. And Robert De Niro is this kind of like unhinged loner who like thinks he's going to make it big. And he's trying to do everything he can. Like he sits in his basement and does like these pretend talk show skits that are pretty disturbing. And long story short, he decides like the only way he's ever going to get a shot is if he tries to make it happen. And he tries to make it happening by kidnapping the host of the show. And telling the producers that like he's gonna fucking blow his brains out if they don't like let him on to do like, you know how like the Tonight Show will have like rising comedians on to do like a 5 minute bit, you know?
Yeah,
and that's basically like that's the plot of it. Like he wants to get on this Tonight Show thing so bad that he kidnaps the host and threatens to kill him. And I think in some ways the movie kind of feels like ahead of its time, but you know it's kind of like in the same wheelhouse of what Scorsese did with Taxi Driver, like these like you know these demented loner like incel types. This is a movie that came out what 40 years before that term, like that's a recent term, you know. He was on the pulse of something there. And also, like, this sense of, like, entitlement, like, the world owes you something. Like, everyone, you know, the sense that like you're special and you need to make it, and like
feels very timely to today.
Yeah, it did, and it's really good. And also, I want to throw one more mention out. There's another crazed fan who like Robert De Niro is friends with, because they both kind of like stalk the office building where the show is shot and blah blah blah. And then she's played by Sandra Bernhard, and Sandra Bernhard is great in it. Like, she's almost more disturbing than Robert. In fact, I think she is more disturbing than Robert De Niro. I don't want to give away, like, if you haven't seen it, some of the stuff she does and stuff that happens with them and the host. But really good movie. It's on Amazon Prime. You know, if you haven't seen it, I'd say check it out. You know, it's Scorsese, so I'd say it's essential. And, you know, if you're someone who's looking forward to Joker, I think it's very clear. Like, so there's like a Tonight Show host character in Joker. You can see him in the trailer, and he's played by De Niro. Like, the parallels are obvious. Like, it's an obvious sort of homage to Scorsese's film. So, yeah, King Comedy is pretty cool, and it's available to stream right now.
Nice.
But anyways, speaking of old films, we are here over the next 4 weeks. We're here to dig into the Rambo franchise. And, you know, tonight we're going to cover First Blood. I'll give all the details about it, and we'll start to get into it and all that. But just like off the top, because you and I don't think I've ever really talked about this, like, what's your relationship to the series? You know, when did you see it? How did you feel about it before going into this rewatch? Go ahead, Chris.
The series as a whole. Mm-hmm. So
the series, this film, yeah. And the series both. You know.
So I think my first actual exposure to Rambo was probably Rambo 3. 40. And I would have been, I was 10 when that movie came out. And I think I saw it with my grandfather. And then, like, he showed me the other Rambos, probably against the advice of my grandmother. but my grandfather loved, like, he was a vet, and he loved, like, big, dumb action war movies. Like, he wasn't a big fan of, like, the more serious war movies. I guess the ones that probably gave him...
Such as First Blood.
maybe.
I mean, we'll get into it.
But yeah, I think he was more like
not a big Deer Hunter fan.
Nah, like he liked Arnold, and he liked, you know, Stallone, and like their big dumb movies. That
Chuck,
you know,
Norris, the Delta Force.
Yes, like Delta Force was one that I remember him really liking. Like,
oh, for sure,
dumb stuff that like kind of glorified the military, but was not an accurate portrayal of it at all. I think he liked the idea of the military being seen as heroes, but him knowing and having been, you know, in the military serving in World War II, like, that's not how it is. So I think he liked the more cartoonish versions of that. So yeah, Rambo 3, I think, was my first exposure to it. And then I saw the other ones. And I remember liking Rambo 3 when I originally saw it. I do not have a love for this series like I do like Die Hard or some of the Arnold films of that era. Stallone has always been like number three on the, you know, he's like the leather face of the action.
All right, so what's your pecking order here? Like who's one and two?
In terms of how I go, like, in terms of like who I prefer more. At the time, it was probably Schwarzenegger
as like number one.
Yeah. And then, you know, Bruce Willis at the time, and then. Which is funny because like going back and looking at his movies, they're not like a lot of his movies are not big action movies in this vein.
He kind of like Bruce Willis kind of arrived in the late 80s, and then like, you know, he started off with like, wasn't he on like some like
It's on like moonlighting.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But then, like, you know, Die Hard, like, establish him immediately as an action star, but a new type of action star, like a opposite of
Rambo.
Stallone. Yeah.
Because I think as we're gonna discuss in these talks, like, Rambo becomes more of a fucking cartoon character,
like an
as the exactly. He becomes a literal action figure by Rambo 3. I don't have a love for it, but Rambo, which I think is just called Rambo, right? The fourth movie. I remember really liking that one. That movie's over a decade old now, but that came out 30 years after, or 20 years after Rambo 3. And I think it's just like, you know, at the time when that movie came out, that was exactly the type of action movie that we needed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting going back and watching these films now.
I think in some ways I'm similar to you. I don't love the Rambo series. It's always just kind of been a staple. It's always kind of been like the B tier.
Yep.
I'll put them above, you know, as much as I kind of love some of what like Van Damme did, I put them up a step above that stuff, you know. But like, they are iconic 80s action films, especially some of them. It's an interesting franchise, though. And we're going to get into it over the next 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember like you really liking the fourth one when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers, I've seen them all. I did my homework ahead of time, so I know how I'm going to reassess the series, and let's just say I was surprised with some of them. But my relationship to the series kind of, interestingly, like, I think I probably saw two or three before I saw the first one, but I remember at some point my dad was like, you need to watch First Blood. But first you should read this book called First Blood. I was like, okay. Like, he told me this story about how he had a high school teacher who told his class that there's these two novels. One is called Jaws and one is called First Blood. And within a decade, one of them will be a blockbuster picture, his teacher told him. His teacher ended up being right in the fact that, Jaws is one of the biggest films ever made and First Blood was big as hell. Like, his teacher predicted that one of them would get made into a movie, and he, like, kind of, I don't know if he taught them to the students or just, like, recommended them. But my dad was like, you gotta read this book, First Blood, it's badass. So I read the book, I, you know, really liked it at the time, and I watched the movie, and I think I liked the movie less, but I still liked the movie, and I was into it. I think I remember liking Rambo 2, and I remember hating Rambo 3. And like you, I remember when the fourth one came out, really digging that. I'm not going to reveal how I feel about all these until we get to them, like how I felt about them rewatching. But that was my memory going to this. I was like, you know, I have these memories tied into it with my dad and the book of First Blood. You know, two, I remember being fun. Three, I remember hating. And four, I remember being like the super violent fucking insanity, which I really loved. And let's just say that those opinions that I held, not all of them hold up anymore after rewatching these.
So that's fair.
That'll set the stage here. Just as a general note before we head into this, I think that this series starts off as one thing and quickly becomes something else.
So I think I'm going to say it right now. I mean, before we, I think this is a series that should have stopped here on this film, because everything after this is completely the opposite of what this film was saying.
It is, but that we wouldn't get some of the ones that I don't want to like reveal. I think you know what I'm thinking, but we would get some of the ones that are fun, dumb action movies. So like you're right, but at the same time, it's like, well, I enjoy some of them for what they are.
Sure, but sure.
Let's talk about First Blood, Chris. It's a 1982 action film. It's directed by Ted Kotcheff. Screenplay by Michael Kozel, William Sackheim, and Sylvester Stallone. It's based on the novel by David Morrell. This movie had a budget of $15 million and did a box office of $125 million. So, like I said, this thing was a big hit. And the story here, if you've never seen First Blood, or even if you have, is it's basically a Vietnam vet. He comes back home to America. He's kind of like wandering around the U.S., it seems like. I think at the start of the film, and again, like I said, I did my homework early, so if I get any details wrong, correct me, Chris, or if I'm foggy, hopefully you. I think at the beginning of the film, he's like kind of stopping by. He's like in this small town, Hope, Washington. I think he's stopping by one of his like fellow soldiers. He was going to check up on him.
He was going to visit, I guess just randomly, one of his squad mates. And he stops at the house that his friend had given him the address to, and he finds out that he died.
Yeah, so he's just off on his way. He's wandering to the next town, and the basic story of this film is he has a run-in with this like small town sheriff who tells him to keep moving. They butt heads, and it kind of gets worse and worse, and it ends up like being, Don Rambo, this Vietnam vet versus this small town police force. This is different. This is not like a dumb action film like you might expect if you've seen posters of Rambo or, some of the sequels. This is like really kind of a commentary about post-Vietnam America. And it's specifically about how we treated the soldiers who came home.
Yeah.
Which is, it's, again, I was born in 82, the year this film came out. So it's a little bit before my time. I know Vietnam from, what I learned in school and the movies, kind of. And it always kind of struck me as weird how, I guess, that Vietnam vets were treated poorly by people. You'd think, like, these hippies that are protesting the war and stuff, that they would be against the war, not the soldiers. I know there were things that happened in Vietnam that maybe would have tainted the reputation of soldiers, I guess. But, I think, like, my point of reference is I think of the war in Afghanistan, in the Iraq war after 9/11, and, there were soldiers who did very bad things, but, like, me as a super liberal, I would be the hippie of this day. I never blamed this, like, outside of the specific soldiers who did, like, kind of torturing of prisoners, right, and like, stuff.
They're doing their job.
Well, I mean, some of them they're getting ahead, but like, I kind of always blamed those specific soldiers that did wrong, or and the general, like, the administration that brought us that war and yes, conducting it, so it's
and not the other people that volunteered that were, like, they wanted to be, for whatever reason, they joined the military and were a part of it. They were just doing their job because that's what their job entailed them to go fight in Afghanistan. They didn't want to go there. They didn't want to get, like, possibly killed. But they did their job honorably. And within the bounds that they were held by, it's these other people that, and I think I agree with you. Right. Like we hold the individual accountable and then the administration that put them in that position in the first place accountable, not the soldiers that went there and did their job honorably. And, we're just doing it because that was what they had to do.
Yeah, like, the only soldiers I like hold in contempt for what they did in any war would be the Nazis. I think for you to sign up to do that on behalf of your government is fucked. But That's like the prism I kind of look at the Vietnam era through, is like the era that I know, and it's like I couldn't imagine spitting on a soldier coming back from Vietnam, but I guess that was a thing, you know, like that it was. And there's a problem too with the like, because that war was so unpopular, it's a problem that continues to this day. A lot of Vietnam vets, the ones who are still with us, are homeless, and that's kind of what this movie's about, right?
You know, right.
The post-traumatic stress disorder, and that's really what I think it was, what the author of the book said that the story was about PTSD and about how, like, these people are coming back damaged and we're not holding up our end of the deal. And I was reading something that, like, Stallone had, like, said when he was, like, doing one of his 800 drafts of the script, which was that, like, he viewed John Rambo like Frankenstein. The government made this monster. They sent him to go do something, and then they tried to plug him back into society, and it didn't work out. You know, like, he's still the monster, and society, but the society that made him doesn't want to accept him back in.
Right.
Which I think is, like, pretty astute observation from Stallone there. But that's, like, yeah, like, this thing is different to me. Like, this, it feels more like a 70s film than it, you know, it came out in 82, but it kind of feels like a 70s film to me. And it's not heavy on the action. I mean, there's action. I don't know. What do you think? What do you think? Like, I'm talking a little bit much here, but
it's a different kind of action.
I think 80s action is different. That's what I was thinking about when I was watching these movies.
Well, it's not the big bump. Like, I mean, there are explosions and shit, but it is not like the big bombastic, in your face action hero. Like, everything that Rambo does in this is defensive, except for the, like, very end, kind of where he storms the town, which is a bit absurd, but
yeah. So,
but yeah, he's mostly on the defensive. Like, even with his, like, you know, guerrilla warfare traps and stuff that he sets when they're chasing him, it's because they're chasing him. He's like, I didn't do anything. Just leave me alone.
Yeah. So let's like detail how this goes a little bit. Like, so he gets picked up. First off, the sheriff tries to tell him, keep walking. Like, he gives him a ride and drives him to the other end of town. And he's like, keep walking. And Rambo turns around and comes back in. So the sheriff arrests him. And then, like, it turns, I think he has, like a flashback while they're arresting him. And he freaks out.
They're overly hard on him. Like, I mean, it's,
This movie puts you squarely on Rambo's side in the first 20 minutes.
Oh, like, yeah. It's like these cops, outside of the one played by David Caruso, who is this guy Mitch, they're all assholes.
Yeah.
Every single one is an asshole. They're all, like, picking on this dude. Like, there's no, like, there's no, you have no sympathy for any of these cops except for Mitch, who is like, hey, you know, what the fuck are we doing? Like, leave them all, like, calm down. Like, and he's like, he doesn't want to, like, look when they're, like, fucking, like, spraying them with the fire hose. And, like, they're picking on him. Like, except he's the fucking voice of reason, like, out of all of these guys.
Like, they're, like, yeah, they're just treating him awfully. Which you would think, you know, wouldn't happen, but I mean, I see stuff every day with treating people very horribly. But yeah, they take him in. He freaks out. He, like, beats the shit out of everybody. Gets out of there. There's this fun motorcycle chase, you know, out of the town. And yep. then you know, Rambo's off into the mountains of the Pacific Northwest. And it really, at that point, to me, kind of starts to feel like a survival film more than anything. It's like man versus nature versus the people that are out to get him. You know, Rambo is left with, like, a knife and a compass, you know, and that's kind of it. I mean, it's him versus the elements, you know, police force with guns, dogs, helicopters, cars, and he's just kind of got nothing. Like, he's, like, scrounging for shit. Like, he finds a piece of canvas, and he, like, makes a little, like, you know, kind of shirt out of that, yeah, which, by the way, that was... that was just there. They found that canvas there, and it like kind of was like the outfit he wears throughout the film was just this accidental thing that they found. But yeah, that's like I think the heart of this movie is this kind of like guy being hunted in the woods type thing, you know, mm-hmm. and like how does he survive? And he survives because he's such a great soldier and he knows his shit, blah blah blah. Like for this supposed like, you know, this is a movie that started a big action franchise. Rambo doesn't kill any, like he arguably kills one person in the entire film. And that's like this, if I remember correctly, it was like a helicopter spots him and this dude is like shooting at him from the helicopter. And I think Rambo throws a rock or something. Yeah,
throws a rock and the helicopter obviously jerks because like you know, a rock getting tossed at you. I mean, I don't know if you've ever had even a pebble or something hit your car as you're driving, like you'll have some sort of reaction to something flying at your face. The helicopter pilot kind of jerks it aside, and this guy who was being an asshole and was told, "Hey, one, don't fire it at the fugitive," and two, like the helicopter pilot was like, "Get the hell back in here, you're gonna get hurt." And instead, like he tells him, "Like, hey, there's like an updraft, like it's hard keeping this thing steady. You're not safe out there." And the rock hits it, he jerks the helicopter, and the guy falls to his death.
So it's like, that's the only person that Rambo kills in the film. And it's like, I don't know, do you count that as a kill? I really kind of count it as he's just kind of defending himself, or...
Yeah, he's just trying to like, hey, get back off. Like, I don't have any weapons, I have no gun, I don't have anything. Back, though, like, I guess, like, at that point, yeah, he didn't have a gun at that point, right? Because...
No.
So he just threw the rock, and that was it. Like, just back off, like, leave me alone. And this guy was so hell-bent on because he felt that he had been embarrassed when Rambo broke out that he was going to kill him despite his orders to not do so. I don't count it as a kill, no.
Yeah. And it's like, so that's fairly, like, that's maybe early into the second act of the film.
Yeah, it's a chunk in.
And, but then, like, the heart of the movie from there on out is them kind of like trying to hunt Rambo and take him down and him are outsmarting them every step of the way. And meanwhile, his old Colonel Troutman comes in, played by Richard Crenna. And he is kind of like informing the police as well as the audience of like who Rambo is. And, you know, he's like basically just telling him like, you fucked the wrong Marine, to borrow a line from, I think it's Stupid Ben. He's like, you know, you got, like, this guy's, like, got all these medals of honor, like, he's like a killing machine, and you, like, set him off, and I think there's a real fun, like, kind of duality between, like, Rambo and this Sheriff Teagle, I think, Teagle or Teasel?
Yeah.
Played by Brian Dennehy.
Teasel.
Yeah, it's like Dennehy, I think, is one great as this asshole cop in this, like, just perfectly cast. He nails it all. He's so good in it, in my opinion. And it's just like this, like, you like when like Troutman tells him like all this shit, like you just see this look on his face like, oh fuck. But, like, he's, you know, he has his own pride, and he's unwilling to admit that he was in the wrong to begin with, you know what I mean?
Right, and Troutman gives him an out, right? Like, hey, let him go. We'll get him,
we'll find him, yeah.
Yeah. The situation will diffuse. In a couple of weeks, we'll pick him up in Seattle. He'll be working at a car wash, and he'll come without any problem. But no, this guy, Teasel, is so hell-bent on, like, no, I've been embarrassed. I'm the law in this town. Nobody fucks with me, that he continues to throw, like, good after bad.
And so, like I said, like, that's most of the film. And then, like, at the end, you have the thrilling conclusion where, like, Rambo brings the war back to the small town. And so, like, he gets back to town, he's, like, all geared up, he's got guns and shit now, he starts just, like, blowing up, like, gas stations, and he sets, like, a
It's a gun store on fire with all the ammunition.
And then you get like, so I think it's like a really kind of fun, thrilling like third act there. But then you get this like kind of surprising ending, I think, where it's like he shoots the cop, you know, he shoots Denny, he's about to take him down and kill him. Then Troutman, his you know commanding officer, shows up and starts trying to talk to Rambo, and he's like, "You're surrounded, you're fucked." And there's like this like movie just like ends on this like strong like emotional note, like this strong like emotional like monologue from Rambo about kind of his experiences in Vietnam, basically. And then it just ends. He surrenders, and that's the end of the film. It's like, it's so, I think it's a very surprising, like, if you could take yourself out of knowing how that ends, like, and see it with fresh eyes, I think it's a surprising ending. What were you going to say?
Yeah, well, it certainly does not fit, like, the rest of the 80s.
And the rest of the formula. Series. Yeah.
Right. But it's, you know, it wasn't just him, like, he's kind of relaying his information on like his experiences in Vietnam, but then like you're like looking back and like, all right, like he comes home and like that, like he went through all this shit abroad and then he comes home and nobody wants to accept him here. Nobody wants to accept any of them here. And he doesn't feel that he has a place anymore. Like it's this very like poignant, heartfelt kind of speech that like he's almost crying like through it.
I mean, he is. It's very like kind of heartbreaking. Like he's talking about his friend who got blown up through most of it, where he's just like,
yeah,
blah blah blah, and like this kid came up and he was gonna shine a dude's shoes. I went inside the store to go grab something, and it turns out the shoe shining box was a bomb, and I couldn't find my friend, and he's missing his legs. Like it's just like, this, like
yeah,
it's really like. And I think, you know, I think Stallone has certain talents. I think there's part of me that's like, he doesn't quite nail it in the speech, but then there's part of me that's just like, he really goes for it. And it does mostly work for me, you know?
I think it does. Like, I think his delivery, which is almost like garbled. Like, I mean,
Stallone, you can easily like, make fun of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, and I've read more recent reviews, like of people that have rewatched it kind of making fun of it. And it's like, I think you're missing the point. Like, I mean, he's just,
it doesn't matter what he's saying. It really doesn't.
It doesn't matter
that you hear it perfectly or anything. Like
it's that he's broken down. Like,
yeah.
And he does not have a place in the world. And it doesn't matter if he's speaking with marbles in his mouth or not. Like he's delivering you the information that you need and like to understand the entirety of everything that has happened from the beginning of this film to this point. I think it works very well. I mean, I don't think Stallone's the best actor, but I think he does a very good job here.
Yeah, and yeah, I think like I said, I think like Stallone has certain talents. Like you said, he's not the most amazing actor ever, but like dude kind of wears his heart on his sleeve, I think. And I think it works for this. The ending, so my dad, when he first told me about like you gotta read First Blood, he kind of told me like the book's amazing, the movie's okay, but the ending's kind of bullshit. And the reason he told me that is because like the ending of the movie is very different from the book. So like, do you know like what the original ending of the film or like what the ending of the book was? Do you know that?
No, I've never read the book. I don't know how the book ends.
All right, let me read to you from the Wikipedia on the book. Using his local knowledge, Teasel manages to surprise Rambo and shoot him in the chest, but is himself wounded in the stomach by a return shot. He then tries to pursue Rambo as he makes a final attempt to escape back out of the town. Both men are essentially dying at this point, but they're driven by pride and desire to justify their actions. Rambo, having found a spot he feels comfortable in, he prepares to commit suicide by detonating a stick of dynamite against his body. However, he then sees Teasel following his trail and decides that it would be more honorable to continue... more honorable to continue fighting and be killed by Teasel's return fire. So basically, they both shot each other, and Teasel's still pursuing him, even though they're both shot. Rambo fires at Teasel, and to his surprise and disappointment, hits him. For a moment, he reflects on how he had missed the chance of a decent death, because now he's too weak to light the fuse to blow up the dynamite. But suddenly he feels the explosion he expected, but in the head, not the stomach where the dynamite was. Basically, Troutman comes up and blows fucking Rambo's head off with a fucking shotgun, and then walks over to Teasel, and tells him that Rambo's dead, and Teasel dies. So, like, basically, Teasel and Rambo both die at the end, and Rambo dies by Troutman blowing his fucking head off.
That would have been an ending.
that would have been a hell of an ending. And my dad was. They came up with this bullshit ending because they wanted to do sequels, and I think that, you know, that's probably right in a way. I think there were probably other concerns that maybe it was too dark and too grim, etc.
Yeah, I don't know if that flies in 1982.
But, like, the more I think on it, I think that, like, I like the ending of the movie better. Like, I think it's, like, kind of touching and kind of soft. Like, it's kind of tender, which is, like, something that...
Well, right, like, it's this was all a big misunderstanding.
Yeah, and it's, like, and it, like...
And it didn't have to go this way, right? Like...
It speaks to what the story is about, like... Basically, I mean, one way you could say it's like lazy writing on Stallone's part, that like you have the character explain the point of the story to you, but I like it more than this super grim, like both guys kill each other because they're so proud of who they are and they're just killing machines. I think there's something about this ending that I think in a way improves upon the original story. And I think it's part of what I think makes this film a classic, like, is that ending, like that emotional release at the end where you're just like, fuck man, I feel so bad for this guy. But so yeah, that's a huge, huge change there. And again, like my journey is like, I used to agree with my dad. I was like, yeah, you never change the book, you know? And now I'm just kind of like, I like this more, I think.
I think I'm with you on that. I don't know if I would have liked that ending.
I mean, in terms of, like, is that ending pleasurable? I think it would be pleasurable to nobody. It's so fucking grim and shit. But, like, could I admire it? Yes.
Oh,
but
sure.
I think that I think there's something to be said for the way that Stallone went with this. I had a bunch of trivia. I think I touched on a lot of it, but one more big thing that's like kind of important is that when they were done making this film and Stallone saw the first cut of it, he hated the film, like absolutely hated it, and he tried to buy the rights to the film back so he could destroy it because he thought it was going to be the end of his career. And actually, like, he hadn't had a hit since Rocky. Everything was kind of a bomb. So what happened was the original cut of First Blood was over 3 hours long.
Oh, wow.
They cut it down to make it a lean 93-minute action movie, and Stallone was okay with it by that point, and they released it, and it became a huge hit. I just wish that there was the 3-hour version out there. Yeah, I'd like to see it.
Like, it'll be interesting. I don't know if it would be good, but it would certainly be interesting.
Dear Lord, would I love to see that. Just because, like, you know, that original 3-hour version was probably much more of drama and much closer to what the book was, like, this gritty survival thing too, but I imagine that, you know, with 3 hours of time, you got to flesh things out more and make it feel more like a drama. Because as it is, like, yeah, it has those moments, like the ending, but it is kind of like this lean, survival action thing with this guy fighting a police force. But yeah, that's First Blood. like there's like maybe one or two. Oh yeah, well, regarding the change in the ending, so Richard Crenna plays Colonel Troutman. Originally was going to be played by Kirk Douglas.
Okay.
I mean, like, he was, like, signed on. He was going to be in it. But Kirk Douglas did not like what Stallone did with the script. Like, he didn't like what Stallone did with the ending of the... Like, Kirk Douglas wanted the end of the novel. And when they decide, like, when they, like, refused to stick to that, he dropped out of the film. They actually hired Richard Crenna at the last second, and he often had to be like told his lines because he had no idea what the fuck movie he was in or what he was doing. He's just like, all right, I'm like a hired body to do shit here. Which is funny because he kind of became one of like the iconic parts of the series, I think, from this. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely more trivia, but I think I touched on like the stuff that was important. That's First Blood. Let's give a rating, Chris.
I'm going to give it a 4. I think most of it works here. I think the 90-minute runtime is actually works very well for it. And you know, it is a lean film. Like, there's just enough setup, and then we are pretty much action for the next like 70 minutes. And it's pretty good action.
Yeah, with kind of something to say, you know. I think this movie's a classic. I'm giving it the same rating as you, though. That's the thing I was thinking about like this week. I'm like, can a movie have 4 stars out of 5 and still be a classic? Well, I'm saying it can. Sure. It's a classic film. I think this movie generally holds up. It's super interesting, I think. I think, yeah, it kind of feels like this weird kind of 70s movie. It feels like this transition, like the film itself feels like this transition between two different eras of film. And like, you know, after this year, we'll be entering into a new era, I think, with Rambo First Blood Part 2. But yeah, this is just one of those movies that's like, when you think of Stallone's career, it's like there's Rocky and there's First Blood, kind of. Like, that's kind of like the two big ones. And I think this one it still holds up and is worth seeing. I think the kind of interplay between Stallone and Dennehy in it is great. And you're kind of like on the soldier side as like this whole police force is coming after him. And like, I really like movies too where it's like a dude surviving in the woods or some shit. You know what I mean? Like, I just really dig shit like that. So this is one of those. So yeah, I guess for next week we will have Rambo First Blood Part 2. I don't think I'm seeing anything in the theaters, Chris. Like, I'm tempted to go see the Midsummer Director's Cut that's 3 hours long.
Ooh, yeah.
But
that's something. I thought about that. There's like a weird sci-fi film I think it's a cop. His niece gets killed, but he's somehow able to communicate with her in the past. I don't know. It's really weird. I thought about going to see it. Reviews are not good.
What is the name of this?
Oh, what the hell is it? I will tell you in a second.
It's like a new film that's opening this weekend?
Yeah, it opens. It is called Don't Let Go. And it's about this cop whose niece and I guess her family gets killed. And he is trying to solve the murder, but he is communicating with his niece in the past, like on by phone. It's really weird. It's
this fucking
weird
frequency meets fucking, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I have that here. Is that like a theatrical release?
Yeah, it's theatrical release.
I don't think I have that. I think the only, I'm looking at my new releases here, it's all fucking mostly shit that I've seen. Yeah. Like the only thing I'm getting, starting actually tomorrow on Friday, is I could go see Midsummer at 9 p.m. and watch 3 hours of that. Like, I really want to see a 3 hour version. And it really sucks because I'm going to get it when it comes out on Blu-ray, but like, I guess the Blu-ray won't have the director's cut, like there, or there's no option to buy the director's cut. I'm like, so what? The only way to see that is in theaters. Like, I would really love to see what a 3 hour Midsummer looks like, but I'm not really willing to go see it in the theater. Not because it's like too long, but it's just like, it's also a movie I've seen already. You know what I mean? Like, right. It's like, it's tough, but I don't think I'm going to be seeing anything in the theater.
We've already reviewed this year, but for the 20th anniversary, which was back when we reviewed it, The Matrix is going to be in theaters. It's going to be in a theater at close to me on the big screen on like one of their Dolby.
Oh yeah.
Ones. I'm not doing anything tomorrow, so.
Well, maybe. If you don't see it, we'll talk about that. I mean, we already talked about that whole franchise, but I would love to hear like what you thought.
Be interesting to see it in the theater with like modern sound.
Yeah, yeah.
It's in one of those Dolby cinema theaters, and then with I assume a new transfer, because they also have like that Dolby script, like the Dolby projection, which has the higher contrast and deeper blacks, and so like the film should look amazing, but I don't know. We did just watch it, so.
I would consider it for that one. Also, just one random note to end on before we leave this, and I'm gonna kind of embarrass myself here a little bit, but Chris, have you ever seen the Stallone film Cobra?
I have. I don't remember much about it.
Okay,
he has a car.
I've been like on the edge of. There's like a Scream Factory Collector's Edition you could buy on Amazon. It's like it's actually on sale for $20. It's normally $30.
What I remember about it is it's not a good movie.
I've heard some really interesting things about it. So like I've heard it pitched as a kind of horror film, like mixed with action, where Stallone is trying to take down like a serial killer. And I'm like, oh, that sounds awesome. So,
yeah,
I've never seen it, put it that way.
Is that it starts off in a grocery store where this guy is kind of taking hostages inside, and Sylvester Stallone's character comes through and like shoots him down. It's so dumb. That's all I remember about it. I'm pretty sure I've seen the entire film multiple times, but that's the only fucking thing I remember about it. And he has a car. Like, that's it.
But mainly, like, I hear it's like Stallone as this Italian Cobretti, I think his name is, isn't it? Cop, yes, who's taking down. Right. It's like, so it's like a Stallone action film where he's a cop, but kind of mixed with horror because he's taking out like a serial killer. And I'm like, dude, I need to see this. My only question is, do I rent it for $2.99 or do I buy the collector's edition for $21 blind?
I would not buy it.
All right. Well,
I don't think it's one you're ever going to go back to. Like,
I mean, I surprise myself sometimes, but maybe I'll give it a rent. It's too bad that it's like out of the 18 different things I'm subscribed to that like
it's not available on one.
I always get mad. Like when I wanted to see A Few Good Men last week, I was like, how is this not on like Amazon Prime or Netflix or something? So I ended up having to buy it, but I'm actually happy to own that. But well, maybe I'll have some thoughts on Cobra for next week. But at the very least, I think we're going to have some surprising discussion about Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Yep.
So I'll come back for that.
Movie dudes! I do own A Few Good Men. It's one of my absolute favorite movies.
So I was telling Chris, I just rewatched that, and good lord, did I love it. Like, it's so fucking good, dude. Like,
oh, it's a fantastic movie. Like, I know the big thing everybody remembers is the speech at the end. Did you order the code?
Yeah, but like, what I was telling Chris is I didn't remember that scene's like 20 minutes long. Like, you're hanging on every word of that climax. It's so fucking good, dude. What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, like, it's such a great build, especially kind of seeing Tom Cruise's character and kind of how he's like this, not really cheesy, but, you know, he's not really an attorney at the start of the movie.
This is exactly what I was telling Chris about. I'm like, what I don't remember is it's all about, like, how his dad, like, he's trying to, like, live up to what his dad was, but he's also just this cocky shit. And, like, Demi Moore's, like, kind of pointing him in the right direction to, like, be a lawyer with, like, morals and shit. I was just like, I don't remember any of that from when I was a kid and watched it. You
know? Yeah, because a lot of people, and I get it, a lot of it goes towards Jack Nicholson's strong performance and kind of that big, iconic last scene. But so much of it is...
There's so much more going on, dude.
Oh, yeah, there's a ton of great scenes in that movie. Like the one where he snaps, where he's like, I can't do anything. And he chases it down the rain with the car and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And even the two soldiers, like, just kind of seeing their arc and realizing, like they did a bad thing. But
yes.
They didn't realize they did a bad thing.
Yes. Like, they have a whole arc, too, because at the end, they're found basically not guilty, but guilty of, like, one of the smaller crimes or whatever. And like, the kind of one soldier's kind of a simpleton or whatever, and he asks the other soldier, like, I thought we did nothing wrong. And the other soldier's like, no, we did do something wrong, because our job is to protect people. And what we did is we preyed on the weak. And I was just like, dude, this movie has, like, it covers, like, every fucking angle of, like, an interesting story about, like, this. I was just, like, just fucking blown away by it, dude. Like,
yeah, it's and, you know, even again, you know, that big iconic scene, but there's a lot of moments in that I think get glossed over. Like, when Colonel Jessup is getting up, and he's like, I would like, and then Tom Cruise tells him to sit down again, and he tells him, I would like to be referred to as Colonel. I think I earned that. And then the judge turns that back on him later on, and I'm like, it's such a nice little thing, because the judge, again, is a great character, but he gets a few scenes. Yeah. It's,
well, you know what's amazing is Jessup, like, Nicholson's character is only in, like, three scenes, I think.
Yeah. It's
like, such a strong impression. Like, that scene where they go to Guantanamo is really great, too, because, like, she's pushing, like, Demi Moore's pushing him, like, pushing Nicholson, and Cruz just wants to leave. And then, like, Jack Nicholson says something sexist to, like, Demi Moore, and then Tom Cruise gets up to leave, and he's like, oh, yeah, but one more thing. I'm going to need the flight log. Like, all of a sudden, Tom Cruise pushes back at Jack Nicholson as he's going to leave. Like, this is so... It's so, like, juicy. Like, the movie's just all fucking dialogue shit, but it's all fucking great, dude. Like, I was telling Chris, I'm like,
oh, yeah. And,
Rob Reiner didn't even have to direct the thing. It's all fucking, like, it's a play. It's all dialogue. It's just great dialogue, dude.
It's
like,
so weird, because we don't really get big movies like that anymore that are so plot and character driven.
Do we even get, like, courtroom dramas, even? Like, it seems like a pretty rare, like, movie to come out now, you know?
Yeah, I think the last one I can really kind of remember was, I think, that Robert Downey Jr.
one. I know, I never saw that one. It's the only one I could think of from, like, the last 10 years.
Is that the one with where he's, like, his dad defending, like, his dad? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know what it's about. I just know that was, like, one of his few, like, post-Iron Man roles that he did, and it didn't do, like, that well.
I think Robert Duvall is his dad or something. Like, I never seen it. Like, I never seen it, but I'm like, trying to think of, like, do they do courtroom dramas? And that was the only one I could think of.
And I think part of it is that, like, courtroom dramas have kind of become the, they've kind of worked better in TV. You have stuff like American Crimes or whatever that thing is called.
True, true. But it just feels like it was, like, a 90s staple back then. You know?
Yeah, somebody, I was reading an article the other day about, like, how they don't really make blockbusters for adults anymore, and it's about The Fugitive. And it's like, yeah, they aren't really movies like The Fugitive or A Few Good Men or, you know, My Cousin Vinny anymore.
There isn't. It really makes me sad sometimes. Like, I don't want hate on comic book movies, but it just feels like they just, like, killed everything. Maybe I'm wrong to just be blaming that.
Well,
but, like,
see, the thing is, I think what comic book movies killed, and I say this as somebody who loves them, somebody who watches them, somebody who owns them all, is I think comic book movies killed a lot of the action movies.
They killed, like the mid-budget action movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the $40 million action movie. They're just like,
they killed
that
the
money
action
in.
Movies. So, and that, but then what happened is, it's kind of like what you see with the gaming industry. It's so much money and resources go to getting those comic book movies out that the people who would have done those kind of small budget original, not even small budgets, but those original kind of B-tier movies just are either doing indie movies or they're doing these big franchise films now.